To the Andy Staples Show. It's a Left Coast edition on this lovely Friday. Antonio Morales from The Athletic, our USC beat writer, joins us because he had one of the more fascinating stories I've read in a while on Keaton Slovis, the USC quarterback, that came out in The Athletic earlier this week. And if you're not already subscribing, you know you can subscribe for a dollar a month for your first 6 months. So what are you waiting for? End of plug. But Antonio, we got to talk about this story because it was really honest and forthright from Keaton Slovis talking about his struggles throwing the ball last year and stuff you just don't hear quarterbacks say in this era. Like they don't kind of let the Joe Cool image drop, but he did. I mean, he was just talking very honestly about some of the struggles he had last year, even though statistically you couldn't tell, but when you watched him throw the ball, you're like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. It was when I was interviewing him, I was like, wow, this is really honest. And this is really enlightening because last year there was all this kind of mystery around it and everybody had a different answer. Clay Helton was saying it was a slick ball in Tucson, or you know, it was raining right the morning of the Arizona State game. Yeah. And
Tucson, notable for its wet heat. Oh, wait.
And the thing is, Keaton Slovis is from Arizona. So, he's used to throwing that type of weather. And Graham Harrell basically saying, like, nothing's wrong. And Keaton being like, my mechanics are all off. So now that Keaton had some time to reflect, I wanted to talk to him about it. And he was very open and honest, saying, I lost my confidence. And if you watched him play in 2019, that wasn't an issue at all. He was making some of the best, some of the most impressive throws.
Well, okay, let's back up to 2019 because he comes in as a freshman. He's unlike most USC quarterbacks. He's not a five-star recruit. He's a three-star guy from the Phoenix area, played at a high school where Kurt Warner was his offensive coordinator. So he had pretty advanced knowledge of offensive concepts. And he comes in, and the idea is he's going to sit behind JT Daniels and learn some stuff. JT Daniels gets hurt against Fresno State, game one, and Keaton Slovis comes in and just starts ripping it. How much of 2019 was you don't know what you don't know?
Exactly. And even, well, look, he committed when T. Martin was the OC. Brian Ellis was the QB coach, and that's who he had the relationship with mainly. That's who essentially found him for USC. And then Cliff Kingsbury gets hired. And even Cliff Kingsbury, they're still recruiting Dylan Gabriel when they have Keaton Slovis committed and about to sign. So, you know, there was that aspect of it too. And then he comes to USC, and people think it's to be JT Daniels, obviously. And they have Bryce Young committed too. So I think the natural progression everybody thought was JT for 3 or 4 years, then Bryce Young's going to come in and start after that. And Matt Fink and Jack Sears were there too. So most people thought Keaton was going to finish fourth in the QB competition that spring. Then it became clear, you know, it was him and JT were the best ones. And then obviously JT goes down and Keaton just takes advantage of the opportunity and throws 30 touchdowns and about 3,500 yards in basically like 10 games. He missed two or three games with injuries and things like that. So he could have put up, you know, about 4,000 yards in a full season that year.
And then you get to last year, and obviously there's no spring practice. So, you know, the hope was you've got this guy who you think is a phenom, and you'll get the first full off season with him as the starting quarterback. And then that doesn't happen. Did they have one spring practice? I know they did one spring practice. Yeah. So they had one spring practice and then that shuts down. The Pac-12 obviously was the last back and the shortest season. And it just looked weird. I mean, you had a clip embedded in your story of a throw he made against Arizona, which, by the way, got caught because they got some amazing receivers at USC. but it was just a wobbly duck. And it's like, what's going on? Cause this guy was throwing seeds the year before. And the Slovis quote that I thought was really interesting. It's the first one you use. He said, you're talking about people wondering what was going on. He goes, I can't really blame them. It's obviously frustrating because everyone thinks I'm still hurt. I know I'm not hurt, but I also know I'm not throwing it like I used to either. I'm a little frustrated myself. And again, it wasn't like something I could diagnose either. You're in the middle of the season. What can you really do? And by just brutal, refreshing honesty from a quarterback, but you know, he's talking about he got hurt, the hit from AJ Epenesa against Iowa in the bowl game, his freshman year. And so was that lingering how hard is that in the midst of everything that was going on last year when he is struggling? How do you do anything about that at that point?
Yeah, exactly. And that was something he wanted to, because he was dealing with arm fatigue at the end of his freshman regular season. He had thrown for 400 yards in four of the final five regular season games. And USC really, really upped his workload. He was talking about arm fatigue. And then he suffers the injury against Iowa, so he has to rest the arm for a bit. He wasn't 100% going into spring practice. He was going to be on a pitch count. And you know, so he didn't have time to go really see a QB trainer like he wanted to. And then by the time, you know, he decided he wanted to, you know, spring practice got wiped out. So that wiped out that part of it. And the pandemic erases, you know, the chance to go see a quarterback's coach. His quarterback's coach, obviously he had Kurt Warner as his OC, but his quarterback trainer back in Arizona isn't even a quarterback coach, really. He's an engineer by day. And he's his son.
Hey,
his
name is Tom House made a very good living coaching quarterbacks being an engineer.
His name is Sean.
Quarterback coach is an engineer.
His name is Sean Seaman, and his son was a quarterback and played the position. So he knew a little thing about the position. So he was the one who kind of helped Keaton through high school and stuff like that. So Keaton had never really seen a quarterback coach before. He said, you know, it was kind of stubborn and he didn't have a lot of knowledge about it. And sometimes he just didn't feel like paying for one. So he didn't really get to work on the mechanics, and any chance he had to was wiped out by the pandemic last year. And like you said, the Pac-12 got back so late and it was a abbreviated training camp. So there wasn't a ton to really work on. And that's why he said he was really frustrated, because he knew this was something he should have addressed probably in recent years, but he just never got around to it.
I think this is so interesting because, like I said, we don't usually see this from quarterbacks. And also because Keaton Slovis is kind of recognized as being potentially one of the big guys in the quarterback class of the NFL draft class next year. Now, he doesn't even have to come out if he doesn't want to. But really, when you talk about guys going to the NFL next year and what the quarterback class is going to be, you talk about Sam Howell at North Carolina, Keaton Slovis, maybe JT Daniels if he has a good year at Georgia, but there's no obvious, there's no Trevor Lawrence in that group. There's no Justin Fields. You know, there may be a Zach Wilson type who pops up and you see him flash and all of a sudden he becomes a big prospect. But it's crazy because he could be a year away from the pre-draft process right now, and he's just now getting past this stuff. And you got to see him throw at USC's pro day the other day, which is kind of interesting in and of itself. They've changed the rules a little bit so that a school can designate five players that are underclassmen that can work out with the pro day guys. And so USC naturally needed someone to throw to these guys, and Slovis was the guy. But you're also letting scouts get an advanced look at him. And how do you think he did in that first kind of look that they had at him?
Yeah, I saw him last week, and then on Tuesday we got to see USC practice and got to see him throw there too. And I think the spin on the ball looks better. You don't see as many wobblers. There was a couple at pro day, but you know, not as many as there were last year. And you see the spin start to get better. I don't know if the velocity is all the way back, but he also separated his shoulder to end last season against Oregon. On the final play of the game, you know, he gets kind of thrown to the turf by two Oregon defenders and it's a separated shoulder. And he had to basically not throw for a month. So it's been two seasons in a row with, you know, significant arm injuries to end his year. And So I don't know if the velocity is all the way back, and the velocity was such a big defining trait of his 2019 season. I think he's throwing better, but I don't know if he's all the way back yet.
Well, and that's the interesting part, because he did get a chance to work with the quarterback's coach, and he's worked with Taylor Kelly, former Arizona State coach, right? And then John Beck, former BYU quarterback, who also, by the way, is Zach Wilson's quarterback trainer for the draft and Justin Fields' quarterback trainer for the draft.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's been working with those guys, and they haven't touched his throwing motion. They haven't touched his arm. It's been mostly, and this was a thing that Slovis knew during his freshman season, but he wanted to fix. They said he was arming so many throws. It was all arm and no legs, no core. So that was something.
Wear out your arm pretty quick.
Yeah. And so that's why he was dealing with the arm fatigue. And so that was something that people had told me about him, you know, in February of 2020, that they wanted him to fix. And you know, he just never had the opportunity to really work on it last year with the pandemic and everything. So that's been the focus this time around. And that's mainly what they fixed, is in posture and footwork. And even Harrell, you know, early in the story, I mentioned how Harrell and him broke down film, and Slovis said that Graham was basically telling him, like, your feet, we need to fix your feet. And that's what's been tripping you up. But so it's been a lot of footwork, a lot of posture, and, you know, generating more power from the lower half.
Any conversation about Slovis or USC at all comes back to Clay Helton. You know, Clay Helton is the guy who came up as kind of a quarterback whisperer finder. He's the one responsible for getting Sam Darnold to USC, and they had all the success with Slovis in the first year, but it feels like Clay is perpetually on the hot seat. And you know, they win the South last year, they lose to Oregon in the championship game. It feels like they have been lapped from a talent standpoint by Oregon as the most talented team in the Pac-12. And I'm just curious, where is the USC administration on Clay Helton? And then where is the fan base on Clay Helton?
I think the administration likes Clay, but when you hear Mike Bone talk, I don't think they've ever been really come out definitively and be like, he's going to be our coach for the future, you know, for the long term. They've supported him, and they've obviously poured a lot of resources into that program, recruiting staff wise and support staff wise. I think they want Clay to succeed, but they're kind of waiting to see it happen. Obviously, that school is dealing with a lot right now. They just paid $1.1 billion payout for the gynecologist scandal that happened, and that's not counting the losses they face.
And that's up there with Larry Nassar. That scandal didn't go into the world of sports, which is why we haven't talked about it much on the stuff we do. But if you're a university, that's a massive thing you've got to deal with that makes you not worry about football at all.
Yeah. And the losses from the pandemic, and when Mike Bone took over, and when everybody thought they were going to move off of Clay in 2019, you know, he was making about $4.5 million. So that would have been around a $20 million buyout then. But that contract runs through 2023. So this kind of feels like a make or break kind of year, even though we say that every year. But yeah, next year would be 2 years with the contract. And at that point, you have to decide something. He hasn't done enough to warrant an extension. And you can't let the contract get to 1 year. So it feels like this year is getting kind of close to, hey, we have to make a decision from an administrative standpoint. And from a fan standpoint, they're not, you know, they're out on Clay Helton.
They've been out for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so
it seemed to me the last few years, because the skill talent at USC is undeniable. Quarterback, receivers are great. The backs have been good, but it feels to me like where they have faltered is at the line of scrimmage. And I think it's interesting because, they've got a guy coming out who's going to be a first-round offensive lineman in Elijah Vera Tucker, who was a guard, and then he played left tackle last year. But I find it fascinating, like Louis Riddick from ESPN, who is a former scout, player personnel director of the NFL, he goes to watch Elijah Vera Tucker, and the only person he can talk about is watching Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. And at what point does USC take advantage of some of the talent it's brought in on the line of scrimmage? Because it feels like that's where they could have an advantage over almost everybody in the league, except maybe Oregon and Washington, and they just don't use it.
Yeah, the recruiting's been falling off a bit at that position, but even when they have gotten guys, they had Austin Jackson and Elijah Vera Tucker on the left side of their offensive line in 2019. Both of those guys are going to be, one was a first rounder and one's going to be a first rounder. And the offensive line was still fairly mediocre that year. They got JT Daniels got knocked out for the season in the season opener. Keaton Slovis got knocked out with a concussion against Utah. And then Keaton got knocked out again against Iowa. And that was on a line that had two first rounders. So you're trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, like, why can't they now it's just starting to be a recruiting problem. So where Oregon's become the go-to place for all the offensive linemen on the West Coast. And it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about it the other day. Obviously, when recruits think about these decisions, they're probably thinking, what's going to best prepare me for the NFL? Oregon obviously has Penei Sewell, and he'll be a first-round pick, but they haven't had a ton of high draft picks other than that. The past 3 years, USC's had a third-rounder. Jackson was a first rounder and Vera Tucker was a first rounder. They've been putting guys out, but the offensive line hasn't performed well. And Oregon's built this reputation of, you know, offensive line, you know, come here. Mario Cristobal's really emphasized it. And, you know, I just, they're in such a tough spot with that right now. And, you know, with Clay, I think a lot of it had to do with the uncertainty about Clay Helton. I remember going to a 7-on-7 event, but there was a lineman camp there as well. And Drake Metcalf, who was a center at St. John Bosco, or a left tackle, and he was in play center in college, and he just committed to Stanford. I was like, well, how much did all the uncertainty about Clay Helton, you know, impact your decision? And he was like, well, if they bring in Urban Meyer, I'm like 6'2". I'm not going to really fit his offensive line scheme well. I'm not big enough. And so, you know, all the uncertainty about Clay hasn't helped. And obviously with Mario Cristobal turning Oregon into a power, he's really cornered the market on offensive linemen out here. And there aren't a ton.
I will point out USC has a guy coming in. He's actually playing his senior high school season right now. But will be on USC's campus this fall. Also St. John Bosco, by the way, Maximus Gibbs. I just love that there's an offense, a 6'6", 350 pound offensive lineman named Maximus Gibbs. So here's the hope for you, USC.
You should watch Coach Snoop on Netflix to get some more Max Gibbs in your life and see what he's about.
Done.
And
the only reason I had just read about him is I wrote a story on a German defensive tackle named Hiro Kanu, who USC's offered, who just came over and is playing for Santa Margarita Catholic. And his second game was against Don Bosco. And Hiro, who's a really funny kid, was talking about living through the game, because basically Don Bosco has like five D1 offensive line starters, and they're just and Hero was playing in his second ever football game, so he's just like, I'm 300 pounds, but these dudes are awesome. so I'll definitely need to watch a little more Maximus Gibbs on Coach
Smith. Yeah, and you know, St. John Bosco, they have Ernest Green, who's going to be a huge priority target. For USC next year, and Oregon and everybody. And that's the kind of lineman that USC needs to keep, you know, home and in their backyard if they want to get back to where they want to get back to.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And it'd be curious, because you mentioned, you know, a recruit saying, well, if they get Urban Meyer, like, that is what recruits are actually saying. Mm-hmm. Like they're not even envisioning a future with Clay Helton as the coach. And that's what Clay's got to overcome. And I think the only way you do that, it feels like the only way you do that is you win the Pac-12 this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like last year was their best chance, to be honest with you. Everybody else was kind of in a state of transition, and they brought back about 16 starters, and they just kind of had a malaise about the way they played. And that's kind of defined Helton's teams for the most part over the years. They just kind of play, you know, it seems kind of lethargic. And that's how they came out against Oregon, and it really cost them. Oregon jumped on them quick, and USC never really was able to make up that hole. Now the talent level is going to start to dip a bit, just because the 2019 recruiting class was a little down by their standards. It finished 20th. And then you have the 2020 class, which was 64th or whatever it is. And Arizona State's going to be in the third year with Jaden Daniels. And the receivers will be a little older this year. Utah is an experienced team, and they've added some good talent with the transfer portal. UCLA seems like it's on the verge of kind of figuring it out. And they gave USC all they could handle last year.
It did feel like the end of last season, Chip Kelly and that UCLA team sort of understood one another finally. I don't know if that's there's any other way to describe it. Like, it felt like that's what they'd been kind of building towards. So we'll see if they can continue that. You and Chris Camerani and Christian Capel, and Doug Haller and Tyson Alger, who all cover various teams in the Pac-12, you guys chimed in a story this week that I thought was interesting. Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman had their top 25 coaches lists. And obviously there were three Pac-12 coaches on there. Clay Helton was not on there. And as you've astutely pointed out, you can't be on the hot seat and on the national top 25 coaches list at the same time. So, but Mario Cristobal from Oregon, David Shaw from Stanford, and Kyle Whittingham from Utah were the three that made the list. And Whittingham has sort of been kind of a thorn in USC's side, it feels like, because he has had that good line of scrimmage play. Like, if he had anywhere near the skill talent that USC's had, I feel like they'd have been in the playoff a couple times.
Yeah, I think where it shows up with them is out wide on the perimeter. They just don't have anyone that could really make a difference and kind of strike the fear in you. They had Carrington for about a year, and Kalen Clay, I think, who kind of made some plays. That was in the middle of last decade. They haven't really had anyone who makes a difference out there. They've had great running backs, Zach Moss, and obviously the tragic situation with Ty Jordan. But they've had great running backs, and that's never been an issue.
USC can go in there and just throw it up to Michael Pittman and win games.
yeah, exactly. Now it's Drake London and Brew McCoy and Gary Bryant, but USC's had those guys, and that seems like the missing piece for Utah. And I think against some of the more talented teams, they run into issues on with their offensive line. I think we saw it against USC when they lost to them and Matt Fink. USC really kind of took advantage of Utah's offensive line, and so did Oregon, and so did Texas and the Alamo Bowl. So I'm kind of interested to see how they address that moving forward.
So Oregon is the one that you kind of wonder, okay, can they take that next step? Because they feel like they're the best program in the Pac-12 right now. You've seen them quite a few times live over the last couple of years. How do they compare? Like, when you watch Ohio State or Clemson or Alabama on TV, how does Oregon's talent compare to those programs?
I think they have a lot of good top-end talent. It's just the depth that's not there. And obviously they're building it right now, but like I feel like Noah Sewell is awesome. I saw him at a recruiting camp, you know, when he was a senior in high school.
Their linebackers are going to be insane next year.
Yeah, and Justin Flo, like I wrote a lot about Justin Flo during his recruiting process. I love Justin Flo. He's going to be awesome too. And you have Kayvon right now. I think they could add more beef to the defensive line. Obviously it's Kayvon right now, but I think that's still an area where they need to improve. The secondary has been good, and they've recruited it well. And they're recruiting linebackers well. I think the one thing that's missing though is kind of, you know, more talent on the defensive line in addition to
like Kayvon. The stud D tackle, like the Christian Barmore at Alabama or the Brian Brise at Clemson, that sort of person. It's hard to find. Those guys don't grow on
especially out west.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting because you think about that. I thought, I'm going to butcher his last name. Jay, how do you spell or how do you pronounce Jay's last name from USC? Is it Tufele?
Yeah, Tufele.
I thought he did a really good job inside. But, you know, Oregon, you have to go back to like DeForest Buckner, who really was, you know, kind of a guy they projected really well, the Chip Kelly staff.
Projected
him really well coming out of Hawaii, high school basketball player. You just didn't know what he was going to grow into, and obviously became a great interior defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. But it feels like that's sort of the domain of Washington and Stanford in the Pac-12. Yeah. Is that's where they find those guys.
Yeah, like a Greg Gaines at Washington. Who
was there 17 years. We could throw Vita Vea in there and Dan Shum too, though.
Yeah. So, you know, that's something that Oregon's kind of missing. They're recruiting receivers better. They got Troy Franklin from California. I'm really high on Ty Thompson. He was one of the last events I went to before everything shut down was an Elite 11 regional over here. And I was really impressed with Ty Thompson. I think he's going to be really good.
I feel like the Tyler Shook transfer does sort of preface that it says, okay, Ty Thompson is going to compete for this starting job. I know Anthony Brown's still there and played well when he came in the bowl game, but it seems like Ty Thompson has a very good shot of being a starting QB at Oregon this year.
Yeah, and I was really impressed with him when I saw him. He was there with guys like Tyler Buckner and Miller Moss and Jake Garcia, who were all highly rated guys in California this past year, and he held his own just fine at that camp. So I think Oregon's set up well for the future. I think the difference between them and USC right now is that offensive line recruiting, and that showed up when Kayvon Thibodeau kind of, you know, just wrecked USC in the Pac-12 title game.
Yeah, and that's the game with Oregon and USC that I feel like is even more telling was the one they played at the Coliseum where USC was very much in the game through the entire first half. And then it was like a switch got flipped and all of a sudden it was a blowout in favor of Oregon.
Yeah. That was the same week that, you know, the day before, 2 days before, word leaked out that Mike Bone was getting hired. And so
right at USC.
I think everyone was certain at that point that Clay had no shot of going back. They just lost by 32 to Oregon at home, and this team that's, you know, stealing all the recruits, and then a new 80s coming. And so everybody was kind of certain that Clay, you know, wasn't coming back at that point, but they rallied at the end of that season and Mike Bone decided to keep him. And, 2 years later, we're still kind of here having the same conversation about Clay Helton.
So, but it's interesting to circle back to how we started this conversation with Keaton Slovis. If he did get things fixed over the offseason and is better than he was last year and is as good or better as he was as a freshman, is it conceivable that they could actually win the Pac-12 and save Clay Helton's job?
I think the schedule sets up nicely for them. They have Arizona State and Cal on back-to-back road games in November, but that's like the only real daunting home stretch. They don't have Oregon and Washington this year, so they miss those two. I think they're going to be worse on the line of scrimmage, but I think the schedule sets up better. And I think it's going to be like a three-team race basically between them, Arizona State, and Utah. And Herm's done some nice things at Arizona State, but you're still kind of waiting for them to break through. This could definitely be the year, but it's still kind of wait and see. They just had so many close losses over the years under Herm where you're just like, is this really going to happen?
Including one to USC where you learn that Parker Lewis really can't lose.
Exactly. And so you're wondering when that breakthrough will come. I would still favor Oregon right now, just because they have so much talent. Kind of interested in seeing what Washington looks like. I think Washington could disrupt things, but
we didn't really get a look at what Jimmy Lake is going to be as a head coach, but with that weird abbreviated season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, Dylan Morris and John Donovan, we'll see what that connection is like this year. But Washington's an interesting place right now, just because of the way recruiting has been going. And I know fans aren't super amped about the coordinator hires. So that's an interesting place too.
They had elite talent in their town and couldn't manage to hold on to it. And I know that that's frustrating to them. Which USC fans are like, hey, we know about that.
And someone like Puka Nacua, who's in the program, and he leaves to BYU kind of surprisingly. And, you know, that's that stuff's kind of surprising. And so I know people have questions up there too. So, you know, there's questions about a lot of different Pac-12 schools right now.
Antonio Morales, it has been a pleasure. This is going to be a fun year in the Pac-12. I know everybody bags on it. I think it's one of the more entertaining products in terms of just watchable football. But I also think the way Oregon's improved, I think there's a chance they get a team in the playoff this year. I would assume it's the Ducks if they get one in. But I cannot wait for Oregon, Ohio State, just to see where they stack up. To see can they play against that level of team? I just can't wait.
And I think we'll find out some stuff from Washington and Michigan too.
Oh yeah.
And I think one of the more fun games will be UCLA and LSU to open the season. That's just an interesting matchup, LSU in the Rose Bowl, and seeing how Chip Kelly looks now in his fourth year. So there's a lot of entertaining non-conference games, so we'll see how the conference stacks up.
I can't wait. I love this. We're actually talking about football, like real football. Like it's really going to happen when it's supposed to happen. And it probably is. It's what a year this is going to be.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be fun. And I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Antonio, thank you so much.